Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play tales to take you away from today. On the podcast this week, we have another installment of Ghost Stories with Sylvia. I thought you might like that. Next up are two responses to Paula's creepy hiking story from last week.
Oh my.
Then Angela tells us about life in Mexico City with a real head scratcher of a story she calls The Faded Woman. And finally, Tom is back with a cat for a hat.
You made that up.
No, I didn't. So what do you say we get it going with a few dumb jokes?
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by Really Bad Jokes. We've all heard them, like this one. How do you find Will Smith in the snow? You check for fresh prints. So, order your bad joke today before they're all gone.
Now, Sheriff, just one more question and my interview will be finished.
Okay, that paper of yours certainly wants to know everything.
What one thing in particular do you think is responsible for your excellent record in solving crimes?
Observation. Keen observation. You can pick up a wealth of information from hearing and remembering seemingly unimportant things. I remember one time... Excuse me. Sure. Sheriff Crowley speaking. Yeah? Suicide? Ada Bell Fredericks? I'll be there in 5 minutes.
I'm right with you, Sheriff. This is more than the paper bargained for. Shouldn't there be powder burns around the wound, Sheriff, if this is suicide?
Should be. That's why this is no suicide. It's murder.
Murder?
That's right. And I'd like to know where you two fit into the picture. I thought Miss Ada had always lived alone.
Well, I'm Mabel Foster, the old dame's niece. She asked me to come live with her 3 weeks ago as sort of a companion, I guess you'd call it.
Aunt Ada had very strange tastes in her choice of companion.
I'm just as good as you are, you money-grabbing
Beethoven.
Break
it up, break it up. Where do you fit in?
I'm Paul Westcott, a nephew. I came here 3 days ago to discuss some business arrangements at Aunt Ada's suggestion.
What business arrangements?
She was changing her will.
Yeah. Now I gotta share half and half with this chiseler.
I'm afraid you won't be sharing in any of it now, cousin. Murderers don't inherit.
Say, what are you insinuating? I was in the kitchen putting nail polish on my fingers when I heard the shot.
You have a nice manicure job there, Miss Foster. You know, I always smear mine. Having the patience to wait 5 minutes for them to dry, I guess.
Who's this female character?
A reporter. Go on.
Well, I was just finishing my left hand when Paul left.
Where'd you go?
I went out the side door to the garage, and I couldn't have shot Aunt Ada from the garage.
But I didn't kill her either. I didn't have any reason.
Seems to me you had plenty of reason, Miss Foster. Both of you.
Cousin Mabel probably wouldn't wait for me to leave. She was just fooling around with her nails waiting. I wasn't out of the house more than 3 minutes when I heard the shot. Mabel probably ran in the bedroom, got Aunt Ada's gun from the dresser drawer, and shot her.
Now I know who murdered old Ada Fredericks, and it wasn't Mabel. It was you, Paul Westcott.
Do you know how the sheriff trapped Paul, even though he claimed to be in the garage at the time of the shooting? Well, in just one moment, we'll hear. But first...
Okay, this one sounds like a real puzzler. Until you hear the punchline. You know, we all make bad jokes, like this one. Why can't a nose be 12 inches long? Because then it would be a foot. Our story is brought to you by Bad Jokes Everywhere. Get yours today or the joke will be on you.
And now, back to our mystery.
You had to be the killer, Paul. Instead of going to the garage, you opened and slammed the door to make Mabel believe you'd gone. Then you tiptoed back into the room and shot your aunt. Mabel couldn't have fired the shot because, as the reporter here said, Mabel's fingers have an unusually nice polish job. Any married man would know that a woman sits around for at least 5 minutes waving her hands in the air so her polish will dry. But you admitted seeing her put the polish on less than 3 minutes before the shot was fired. Mabel couldn't have grabbed the gun out of the dresser and fired it. If she had, her polish would be smeared.
Well, that's what I'd call having an alibi at the tip of your fingers.
Nail polish solved the day. These mysteries just keep getting better and better. Unlike really bad jokes. Have you heard this one? What did one ocean say to the other? Nothing. They just waved. Well, that's it for this 5-Minute Mystery.
Yes, that you said.
I'm proud to say that we have some news to report. Ron's Amazing Stories is now on Pandora Radio. Yes, you heard that right. The music giant now has podcasts. I signed up several months ago to be part of the beta release program, but failed to make the cut. However, my service provider, Libsyn, just informed me that our podcast was picked up and now can be heard there. This completes a project that I've been working on for some time. To have the show on all of the major platforms. I call them the Big Five. We are now on TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora. I want to thank all of you that listen to the show on these various services because you made this happen. Thank you all. If you do listen to the show on Pandora, please be sure to hit that thumbs up for Ron's Amazing Stories. I received this comment from Roman Fitzgerald, who sent it in via the website. Roman wrote, "Hello, Ron. I love the show, but I'm not a happy camper. I have sent in 3 stories to you, and none of them have been on the show. Why? Are they not good enough for you, Roman?" Well, I wrote Roman back and told him that I looked into the archives, but I didn't have any stories from him. For the record, when I receive a story from you guys, I copy it into a program called Scrivener. I have 4 categories: new, approved, used, and rejected stories. Using this method makes it easy for me to track them all. But nothing from Roman. I wrote him back and I asked him how he sent in his stories. It turns out that he sent them to my email address listed on the website. Now, I'm the first to admit that I should have gotten them, but I do have some pretty specific spam filters set up. If you use certain words in your email to me, I may never see it. Also, if you leave the subject blank, I am sure not to get it. But this much I can promise. If you leave a message via the comment function or click on the story submission banner, I am sure to get it. Now, I apologized to Roman and encouraged him to resend his stories. He also asked me what criteria I use to reject stories and if I've ever rejected any. The answer to that is, yeah, I've had to reject stories for the show. I look at it this way. This is a family program, and there is a line that I will not cross. Below that line is a gray area, followed by the green line, which means good to go. I will make every effort with an author to clean up their stories, but in most cases, when I write that person back about their story, I never hear from them again. Also, a lot of times the email address that they leave me, well, it's bogus. Challenges of the business, I guess. And now, this word from Audible. Today's podcast is being brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android computer, Kindle. Whatever you have, you can listen to Audible on it. Now, what am I listening to right now? I am a huge fan of short stories, and that probably comes as no surprise to you. My latest joy is Can Such Things Be? By Ambrose Bierce. Bierce was an American short story writer, journalist, poet, and Civil War veteran. His book is amazing and is expertly narrated by Roger Mellingwith. It contains 24 short stories in a typical Bierce tradition. They are ghostly, spooky, and best listened to in the dark. Or maybe a crackling fire burning dimly in the background. Can Such Things Be? Was released in 1893, but don't let the age fool you. It implies that anything is possible and at any time. I love this book, and I have to say, it is freaky. Now you can have this book today. Here's what Audible has set up for us. Audible is offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories, and you can get your free audiobook today. Thank you, Audible. And now, it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
Show last week, we had a story sent in by Paula Hale from Tukwila Park, Washington. Her story was about an adventure she had on the Ho River Trail. Well, this spurred not one but two responses from you guys. The first one came from my very own brother, Jim. He wrote, "Hi, terrific show. I love the story about the visit to the Ho Rainforest, one of my favorite places. I recall a night when my wife and I drove up to nearby Queets Valley. It's a much longer drive, wilder, and with fewer tourists. We arrived in the deep dusk to an empty campground. Rain was falling from the low gray clouds. The whole place was shrouded in the shadow. We got out of the car and immediately sensed that something was wrong. An ineffable and threatening presence haunted the place. We saw nothing, heard nothing, but something was definitely wrong. We had planned to camp that night, but instead jumped back in the car and drove all the way home to Canby, Oregon. As I think about it today, I think we may have sensed, smelled Sasquatch. The only thing missing was the screams from one of your listeners' stories. Had we stayed, I'll bet we would have heard them. Jim Thompson, Rio Rancho, New Mexico. The second response to that story came from Philip Massey from Parts Unknown. Phil writes, "Your story about Ho was dead on. The whole place is haunted. No matter where you are, you never feel alone. Something is out there watching, and I, for one, have had more experiences there than I can count. Before I moved out east with my wife, I lived in Port Angeles, Washington, which is a bit north of the forest. As a kid, we would go to Hurricane Ridge all of the time. I remember one Saturday morning, my dad and I were out hiking, and we came across a deer carcass. We examined it, and it became quite clear that something wanted us to leave it alone. We were pelted with rocks. Taking cover, my dad shouted out that we were leaving. The response is something I will never forget. A scream came from all around us, and it was not human. Years later, I was watching a documentary on the gorillas of the mist. They played some of the male gorillas' screams. It took me right back to that day. Philip Massey from Parts Unknown. Well, Philip and Jim, thank you for your response to our story from Paula. I think that both of your experiences tell us there is something going on in the whole rainforests. Our next story comes to us from Mexico City by way of Scottsdale, Arizona. Angela White sent us this story she calls The Faded Woman. Hello, Ron. First off, I want to thank you for your podcast. I look forward to it each week. What I like are the tidbits of knowledge you toss in here and there. I sometimes have to listen to the show a couple times to catch them all. This got me to thinking that I could do that with my story. Today I live in Arizona, but as a little girl, we lived just outside Mexico City in a small village called Rancho Santa Rosa. We lived there until we came to the U.S. in 1993. Each week, my family would go into the city to the many tianguis to sell our goods. The tianguis are very common throughout the city and are simply open-air markets, quite similar to the Saturday markets that you find all over the United States. The tradition of buying and selling in temporary markets is a strong feature in much of Mexican culture and has a history that extends far back into the pre-Hispanic period. At these markets, we would sell fruits and vegetables, and in the off-season, we would sell arts and crafts. Everyone works when you sell at the market. It was my job to wander through the crowd and try to get people to come visit my family's stall. Once I got them there, I would head back out and start again. One morning, I had just begun my work and ran into an older American lady. I spoke pretty good English, and I could see that she was somewhat lost and confused. I asked if I could help her. She looked at me and said in very bad Spanish that she was looking for the train depot. I didn't see any opportunity to get her business, but decided to guide her to the closest stop. In the city, cable cars run everywhere. When we arrived, she lit up and told me how much she appreciated the aid. She then reached into her purse and gave me a handful of coins. I was so excited that I hugged the woman right then and there. However, my arms passed right through her. We both looked at each other in shock, and then she faded away into nothing. For a long time, I just stood there, not believing what had happened. Then I was reminded of the coins. I still felt the weight of them in my hands. I opened my hand and began to look through them. There were a few pesos, but the bulk of them were American coin. I went back to my family and told my mother my story. I was surprised when she believed me. Later, we looked through the coins and found that all of them were dated before 1910. I have no explanation of what happened, and it is as clear to me today as it was on that day back in Mexico City. I often dream of that woman and wonder who she was and where she came from. Angela White, Scottsdale, Arizona. Well, Angela, that was an amazing story. I've heard of time slips, and if I had to guess, that's what you experienced. I believe that I too may have had a similar occurrence like that myself once. And I've talked about it on Jim Harold's podcast, Campfire. I saw a shadow figure in broad daylight at a local park. It appeared to me that the man was wearing a fedora and was waiting for a bus. It made no sense. Thank you for sharing your story, Angela, and a bit of your heritage. Do you have a story like Angela that you want to tell on the show? If you do, we want to hear it. It can be about any subject and from any genre. Heck, it doesn't even have to be true. Original fiction or stories from the public domain are perfectly welcome. To submit them, just head to ronsamazingstories.com and click on the Story Submissions banner. Fill out the form, and soon your story will be heard. Have a story but don't want to write it? Hey, that's okay too. Just leave your contact information, a brief description of your story, and I'll get back to you. We then can write it together. Now, there's one problem here. If you don't do it, your story remains just that, your story. Why not make it our story and share it with the world? We all love a good story, but what we truly crave is a ghost story. It's time now for Ghost Stories with Sylvia. Sylvia Schultz is a librarian and author by day, but at night, she becomes a ghost hunter. Following a lifetime spent in the pursuit of the weird and the strange, her nonfiction works include Ghost of the Illinois River, Fractured Spirits, 44 Years in Darkness, Hunting Demons, and The Spirits of Christmas. We now cross over the veil and join Sylvia as she tells us more tales from the unknown. Are you there, Sylvia?
I'm here. Come on in, Ron.
Yeah, it's kind of nice out here now. Last time I came in, it was really rainy.
Well, it has cleared up, and yeah, it's really nice now. Hey, I've got a lovely plate of watermelon here for the summer solstice. Would you like some?
Well, you know, just for the listeners that may be out there, I'm hoping you're out there. Today, as we record this, is the 21st of June, which is the first day of summer.
So I thought it was appropriate to have a little glass of lemonade, great big plate of watermelon.
Well, thank you. I'll try some of this. Oh, it's delicious and very sweet.
Mm-hmm. I just recently learned how to pick a nice, good, sweet watermelon.
Okay. Enlighten us.
Yeah. Well, it has to do with the appearance of the watermelon. Apparently, if the watermelon is completely round, that is a good sign of it being sweet. And if the watermelon has a yellow patch on the bottom, that is a very good sign that it has ripened in the field. Watermelons don't ripen after you pick them. So the longer they stay in the field, the bigger that yellow patch on the bottom gets, and the better they are.
That?
So, yeah.
Okay, we're going to rename this segment from Ghost Stories with Sylvia to Random Farm Tips. What do you think?
Farmer's Market Tips, yeah.
Well, Sylvia, we have an email, and we've already talked about it a little bit, you and I, and we decided that this would be a good topic to go with our show today.
I think it's a marvelous topic, yes, absolutely.
All right, so here we go. I'm just going to read it outright. This comes from Geo Waters from New York. We weren't sure about the heritage on the name. I thought maybe Italian, you thought probably not, but it comes from Geo Waters in New York, and he writes, or she writes, can't be sure. Hello, Ron. Just finished watching your show, and I loved it. I've heard a lot about crystals being powerful tools, but I don't understand them. Can you give me the layman's chatter? Is it science or just voodoo bunk? Can you answer this on the show? Geo Waters, New York. Well, Geo, no, we can't answer it on the show. So thank you for the question.
Oh, Ron, don't be like that. I think we can answer that.
Oh, okay.
I would love to answer that question. Yes, absolutely. But
all right.
Let me ask you this first. Did Geo actually use the word voodoo bunk or something a little saltier?
No, I did edit this email just a little bit.
I understand.
I did replace the bunk with something that might be referred to as cow manure.
Well, I can understand that. Crystals are, it's kind of a woo-woo thing. It's kind of out there. Unless you understand the science behind this. Crystals are, yes, you can say that they're just pretty rocks. And if that's as far as your interest goes, that's perfectly fine. But do remember that we actually use crystals in science and technology and manufacturing. Think of a quartz watch.
Hmm.
You say quartz watch and you say that's the mechanism, and that is exactly right. There's a tiny, tiny little quartz crystal in there, and that is a source of what we call piezoelectricity, and that is what makes the watch function. All of these crystals that we're talking about, whether it be amber or rose quartz or carnelian or chrysocolla, they all have different vibrations. They vibrate at different frequencies. And that is what makes each crystal unique.
Hmm.
Yeah. There are quite a lot of different crystals that are used for different purposes. And the thing is that people don't exactly agree on what each crystal is used for. There's a bit of consensus about it, but they're like somebody will say, well, you could use obsidian for grounding and hold it in your hands and that will calm you down. That will make you more effective in what you're going to, in any task you're going to undertake. It's going to ground you. And other people say, oh, obsidian's not good for that. Not obsidian? No, no, don't even bother with obsidian. But there is a bit of consensus about what crystals are good for. You can get books that will tell you what each crystal does, what its personality is, I guess. And I have a list here, and I don't have all of this memorized by any stretch of the imagination. I had to write it down for myself. I have some crystals that I use. I use it with paranormal investigation, and I use them in my personal life. One of these is amethyst. I'll just read you a bit here. Amethyst is a stone of the mind, just as an example. Amethyst helps bring calmness and clarity where there is anxiety and confusion. It is very good for overworked, overstressed, or overwhelmed mental states because of its extremely calming effect.
Hmm.
Amethyst fosters healing and selflessness and is associated with increased nobility, spiritual awareness, meditation, balance, psychic abilities, inner peace, and positive transformation.
Hmm. Now, is there any kind of science that they use to back that up, or is that just a person's idea of what the stone can do?
A little from column A, a little from column B. Science is just beginning to understand the properties that crystals have. There's still a long way to go in the study of it, and a lot of it is just people's personal experiences with crystals. When you choose a crystal, it's helpful to, say, hold the crystal in your hand and see if it speaks to you, see if it communicates to you in some way. And that's a little woo-woo for me. But I choose my crystals in a way that I pick it up, and if it feels comfortable in my hand, I look at it. If it's pleasing to look at, sure, yeah, I'll take it home.
Hmm.
I was gifted a crystal during a yoga class a couple months ago, and the yoga teacher went around at the beginning of the class, and she had a bowl of snowflake obsidian.
Hmm.
It wasn't in the yoga studio, but it wasn't a yoga class. It was a class on meditation. So she offered everyone a piece of snowflake obsidian because snowflake obsidian is particularly grounding and it will bring you back to a neutral state. It will help you be more receptive to the ideas that come to you in meditation, things like that. I didn't particularly notice anything like that, but I have had a couple of experiences with crystals that I'll share with you guys today.
Yeah, please do.
The first story involves crystals only tangentially, but the second story involves crystals intimately. It is very much I had the power of crystals proven to me in the second story. But let's start off with the first story.
Okay.
Several years ago, I did an investigation at the Peoria Players Theater in Peoria, Illinois. And I had a wonderful time at this investigation. One of the spirits at the theater, among several, is the spirit of Norman N. Dean. He was a director of plays. He passed away from cancer very, very young. He was in his early 30s, and he died in the early 1960s. It may have been 1960. But he loved the Peoria Players Theater so much that he has remained there. He is kind of a trickster character. He really enjoys moving things on people and hiding things. He's just a very genial spirit. He's a lot of fun to be around. So I went to the theater with a couple of friends of mine, and we met up with a paranormal group there. And that during the first part of the investigation, we were under the stage. There's an orchestra pit under the stage, and there's a stairway going up from the floor where the seats are up to the stage. And if you kneel down, if you get on your hands and knees, you can actually crawl underneath the stairway and drop down into the orchestra pit. The orchestra pit has a door in it under the stage that leads to the costume dressing room. And that is where another spirit hangs out. But it's mostly Norman in the theater. So we were down under the stage, and it was so quiet and so peaceful. It was very dark, and we've talked about my nervousness in the dark, but it was so peaceful and so enjoyable. I had such a feeling of tranquility that I could have just curled up and gone right to sleep. I felt that safe. So that was the first part of the evening. We took a break, and during the break, the leader of this paranormal group, a woman named Ann Pritchard, said, okay, after the break, this group that I was with and that she was with, she said, we're going to go up to the back part of the stage, up on that little platform behind the stage. And I said, oh, I'm not sure I want to do that, because there's another spirit in the Peoria Players Theater that is not nearly as nice and pleasant as Norman is. This spirit is a bully. He followed one of the theater volunteers home and was throwing rocks at her in her garden.
Oh boy.
He likes to try and hurt people. He's really not pleasant at all. And this spirit likes to hang out in that area of the theater, in the backstage. If you're standing on the stage looking towards the audience, it would be stage right. There's a little staircase that leads up to a little platform, and that's where that nasty spirit hangs out. So I said, all right, you know, for paranormal investigation, I will suck it up and I will go up there, even though I really don't want to. So break was over, and we head up. There's four of us. There's Anne, there's myself, and there's my two friends, Gail and Allie. So the four of us go up, and this platform, this narrow little stairs leading up to the platform, and the platform's really only big enough for four chairs anyway. So we sit down on these chairs, and immediately I feel like I want to crawl out of my skin. I'm sitting there, my legs are jiggling, and I'm just so tense and so nervous. I was just really on edge. It was like chewing tinfoil. Really having a hard time just sitting there and being calm, especially after we turned the flashlights out and went lights out. The only lights were the stage lights in the theater, and that gave a little bit of ambient light, but we were still in the dark, and I was really uncomfortable. So I put my hand in my pocket, and I had a piece of rose quartz in my pocket that I had gotten years and years before. And it's sort of an oval shape with a kind of a dip in it that fits my thumb just perfectly. So I was sitting there with this piece of rose quartz in my hand, just rubbing my thumb along it. I don't know if it was the rose quartz or just the fact that nothing horrible had happened to me yet, but I started to feel better. I started to calm down. My heart stopped racing. I started to feel better. And I said aloud, because that's what you do in an investigation. You notice something, you tell the group about it. And I said aloud, I said, hey, you know, I'm really starting to feel better. And Gail said, I kind of wondered at that. That was really weird. And it was then that I noticed off to my right. Now, this was, we're on the platform, remember? So that puts us about 12 feet above the floor. So what I was seeing out of the corner of my eye in the right field of my vision was about 12 feet above the stage floor. The stage was lit, remember? So I could see something in the air above the stage. It looked like a slowly revolving, angry wad of rusty barbed wire.
Really?
I could just see it out of my peripheral vision. Whenever I turned my head to look at it, it would disappear. And then I would stare straight ahead and it would come back. And it was just this gnarly, nasty thing in the air above the stage. I'm like, wow, that is really weird. And I described it to the three others that were there with me. And we're all like, wow, yeah, that's kind of weird. We weren't in a position to take a photograph of it. So it just sort of, people took my word for it that it was there, but believe me, it was there. So we finished up the investigation and we were driving home. I was driving and Gail was in the passenger seat. And she said, do you want to know why I said what I said back there when you said you were feeling better? And I said, oh, yeah, I would love to know. What was up with that? She said you said you started to feel better, that was when Norman, the spirit of Norman, came from wherever he was in the theater and surrounded us with a protective bubble.
Really?
He chased that negative, nasty entity away and surrounded us and protected us. I said, oh, so that nasty clot of barbed wire, that was the nasty entity that I was seeing? And she goes, yeah. Norman chased it away from us and surrounded us with this protection. And I said, oh, wow, that's really neat. And she goes, Sylvia, don't you get it? Norman likes you. She said, that's because you were there. That's why he came to us and chased that away.
So this is the Norman that we have talked about, that you have mentioned, and never got to the origin story until now.
Yeah. That's my buddy. That's my buddy, Norman.
That's awesome. That is just awesome.
Yeah, I love that story. I love Norman, too. He's so great.
All right. You said you had a second crystal story.
I most certainly do, and this is much more recent. A couple years ago, about a year and a half ago, I was working on Spirits of Christmas. I was working on that book, and people who have read it and are familiar with it, I'll refresh your memory if it's been several months since you've read it. You should be reading it every Christmas. You should, because it's awesome. The book is separated into several sections. They are all named for Christmas carols. So you have God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, where we look at the Victorians' influence on Christmas. We have It Came Upon a Midnight Clear, which are ghost stories of Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. We have other stories that happen just in December or just in midwinter. But one section of the book is called The Darkest Midnight in December, which is actually a Christmas carol title, which I was ever so grateful that somebody shared with me. But that is the section on tragedies that have happened in December. The Ashtabula Bridge collapse, Pearl Harbor, the Iroquois Theater fire, the Babswich School fire, Our Lady of the Angels School fire, just all of these horrible, horrible things that happened in December. And I knew that this was going to be a difficult chapter to write. So I left it for last because I'm not that disciplined of a writer. You know, I'll eat my spinach first and then eat the sweet potatoes on the plate. But if there's something hard to write, I'll leave it for last because that's the way my mind works when I write. So I knew that
this was the last analogy.
Yeah. I knew this was going to be difficult. So blocked out a couple of weekends to work on this last section of the book. Get this done and the book is done. Woo. yeah, this is great. So I start working on it and start working on it on a Saturday and wrote all day Saturday. By the time I was done, I had a blistering headache. Just from the stress of going through these stories and picking out all the facts and living through these facts in order to put them on the page. And that night I had horrible nightmares all night long. And I said, well, this isn't going to work. I need to do something about this. I need to resolve this in some way. So the next morning on Sunday, I had planned to write all day again. I went to my ghost hunting bag and went to my little crystal bag in one of my pockets, and I took out a piece of black tourmaline. And black tourmaline is very, very powerful, one of the most powerful crystals there is, at dispelling negative energy. That's why I take it on paranormal investigations. So I seriously, Ron, I am not kidding you. I sat there and I held that black tourmaline in my left hand as I wrote with my right hand. And no headaches, no nightmares. I was able to get through that chapter just fine. And that black tourmaline just sat on my desk the whole time I was researching. And the entire time I was writing, it was in my hand.
This is the second time I've heard of this.
Yeah.
And quite recently, I might add. The first time was that person uses that stone to protect their house from curses. They put one in each corner of the house because they were being threatened by a woman in the neighborhood. And so they decided, okay, I'm going to put one of these stones in each corner. Nothing ever happened. Now, whether anything would have happened, don't know. But I have heard of this stone before being used for those types of purposes.
Exactly.
So that doesn't surprise you that someone would use it to block a curse.
Not in the least. Not in the least. Red jasper is also good for that.
That is a great story.
Thank you. That really proved to me, before I was kind of on the fence about crystals. I'm like, well, it's a nice idea and I can get behind the science of it and that's wonderful and that's just fine. But man, I'll tell you, that experience with the working on that chapter and the black tourmaline, that made me into a believer. So Gio, if I don't know if this will change your mind about it being voodoo bunk, but I'm just telling you the experiences that I have had, and that black tourmaline experience was one of the most powerful and one of the most eye-opening for me. So now if I spend the night at a haunted location, like say the Villisca Axe Murder House or the Sally House, I keep that black tourmaline in my fist as I sleep.
So let me take a stab at this. Let me answer the question. Can you give me a layman's chatter as to crystals? So based on what you've told me, it is a personal thing, something that you yourself have to experiment with and decide for yourself how and when to use these crystals. Is that a fair assessment? Did I understand you correctly?
It certainly is a fair assessment, Ron. Yes. Crystals are very personal. There are guidebooks out there that will give you a basic idea of what to use for what purpose, but it's really down to what works for you and what is what you're most comfortable using, what, for lack of a better word, what speaks to you and what works.
Well, Gio, I hope that answers your question because I was fascinated by it all and the stories really helped bring it home.
Thank you.
All right. So you brought up the Villisca House, and I know that we said we were going to talk about it this time, but we're running short on time. What do you say we take the next episode of Ghost Stories with Sylvia and talk about your adventures there? Because I really want to hear how that went. And I know you had some fun there. So
I did. And that was really quite an amazing place. So yes, I would love to chat about that next time.
All right. So on the next time, folks, we're going to hear all about Sylvia's adventure there. But I'm guessing that it's going to be a Lights Out here pretty soon. So why don't you give us an update on what's happening with your podcast, Lights Out?
Absolutely. The Villisca Axe Murder House will be an upcoming Lights Out episode, but it's not going to be for several months yet. I have a lot of others in the pipe. The one that's coming up next is going to be about Starved Rock and the hauntings at St. Louis Canyon. We'll also take a little side trip to Moon Point Cemetery.
You have the most interesting life of anyone I know.
Well, you know, Ron, quite honestly, and I'm going to say this in Lights Out too, I don't make any money from Lights Out. I don't have a Patreon account. I don't have, like you have the little, dog treats. I don't have anything like that. I don't have a sponsor for Lights Out, but people are generous enough to buy my books. And I share my ghost stories through my books as well. And it is because people buy my books that I do have the means to travel to all these haunted places to bring you stories from these haunted places in Lights Out. So if you've bought a book, thank you so much. You're financing Lights Out, even if you don't know it.
So tell us where we can find the books, just so that maybe those folks that don't know can find you. I know the answer.
Absolutely. Amazon. And the books can also be ordered from any local bookstore. If you have a little tiny bookstore in town, go in there and ask them about it. They can always order it for you. And Barnes & Noble carries them. And I am very happy to say that Fractured Souls is done. And I'm still waiting on a release date from the publisher. But I hear that the ebook of Fractured Souls is going to be out next week. We're just waiting on a date for the print copy. Yes.
Well, next time we'll talk a little bit about that and you can kind of give us can we talk you into maybe reading a story from the book?
Oh, absolutely. I have so many more new stories. It's amazing.
So let's do that then. Next time, we'll not only talk about the Valenska house, but we'll also get a little taste of Fractured Souls.
Excellent.
Well, Sylvia, it is a pleasure to come into your world and talk to you about this stuff. And I want to tell you, I appreciate it. And thank you for inviting us in.
Absolutely. Happy summer solstice. Happy first day of summer, everybody. And thank you so much for listening to Ron's show.
You know, I always have a great time talking with Sylvia, and I learn all kinds of new stuff. If you want to visit her on her own turf, head to sylviaschultz.wordpress.com. There you'll find her blog and access to the podcast, Lights Out. I will have the links available in the show notes. Thank you, Sylvia. To do it, or at least are trying to work on it. Some of us may never really accomplish it, and for others it is fading away too soon. Tom Williams, well, he's a lucky man. He lives in Berlin, Germany, was raised in Alabama, and sends in these tales from his youth. On Growing Up This Time, Tom has a story that really doesn't have much to do with growing up. Back in episode number 385, Zertsky's Law, we had a collection of cat stories and cat facts. Tom was reminded of an encounter that he had with a feline that, well, you're just going to have to hear.
My cat story. And I call this A Cat as a Hat. As I was a hotel manager, we came across many odd lost and found items in the rooms. One of the oddest left behind was a cat. This incident started out as one of my housekeepers came into my office and was holding a cat in her arms. Look what I found under the bed of a room listed as a checkout. Wow. I checked the sign-in records and found that the family was from out of town and also another state. They had checked out early in the morning, and I was sure that they would notice the missing cat on their next stop. Well, that didn't happen. We waited all day for the call from the cat owners. Nothing. I went to the store and purchased some cat food, and we found a large dish of sorts for water. We received no inquiry the whole week. The cat was friendly and lovable, and even greeted our guests as they checked in at the reception desk. After about 10 days of trying to contact the owners by phone and finally realizing that the family was apparently moving to another state, I asked the employees if they wanted to adopt the lovable animal. But they all had enough pets at home themselves. Almost 2 weeks of feeding the cat and no way of contacting the owners, I decided to bring the poor thing to the local animal shelter. And so the day came when I, with a heavy heart, put the cat into the passenger seat next to me and drove towards the freeway. The animal shelter was only 30 minutes away, and I'd be back in no time, but it wouldn't be that simple. Once I drove on to the freeway and started gaining speed, the cuddly animal changed. Its back arched into a Halloween-like cat figure and started to growl. The moment I reached freeway speed, it all broke loose. The cat started screaming like a banshee, running across my dashboard onto the passenger seat and then into the back seat. And for a split second, I thought she would calm down and hide. No way. Suddenly, the cat jumped up on my headrest, onto the top of my head, digging its claws into my forehead and remaining there with banshee cries. I was unable to move my head left or right for fear of her ripping my scalp off. Not having far to try, I tried to remain calm, not realizing how this looked to other drivers passing me. I then looked into the rearview mirror. Oh my gosh, there I was. A man in suit and tie with this thing on my head, looking like Davy Crockett with a coonskin cap on. No wonder the other drivers passing me were smiling. Now, the oddest thing, though, as soon as I pulled into the parking lot of the animal shelter, the cat jumped down onto the right passenger seat and started to purr like a kitten. Now I knew why the owners never wanted the lovable cat back. To this day, I just am thankful that no one left a pet boa constrictor snake in Lost and Found. Sincerely, Tom.
Well, Tom, this is usually where I would tell you a story about my past. But in all truthfulness, I can't remember any cat tale worth repeating. Now, cats have been a part of my life, my whole life. But I've never been assaulted or had any strange experience that could match your coonskin cat cap tale. Thank you for your story, Tom. It was, I'm sad to say, very funny. Well, staying with the subject of our friend Tom Williams, I was having a conversation with him about old-time radio commercials. And I want to end the show on this note. Some of those greatest old ads were the ones that stuck in your mind. There was one commercial that Tom indicated to this day he just can't shake off. I'm going to play it for you now. Here you go, Tom.
Hello, amigo. I'm Chiquita Banana, and I've come to say bananas have to ripen in a certain way, and when they're flecked with brown and have a golden hue, bananas taste the best and are the best for you. You can put them in a salad, you can put them in a pie, any way you want to eat them, it's impossible to beat them. But bananas like the climate of the very, very tropical equator, so you should never put bananas in the refrigerator.
Tom, all I gotta say to you now is, how about that? I don't know how we do it, but there is another podcast. I want to thank this time Roman Fitzgerald, Jim Thompson, Philip Massey, Angela White, Sylvia Schultz, and Tom Williams for taking part in the show today. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, just head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find a plethora of links that should meet every need. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it. And please do leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. This really does help us to grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.